Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
That was something supposed to start. There's no music or anything. Are we on? That threw me off. I didn't know that we were going to start that way. Hey,
I messed up.
Sue's News is coming up here in a moment. Dave Murray's going to join us, but I have to fit this in because your next United States Senator from Missouri, Mark McCloskey, has pleaded guilty to a misdemeanor.
The prosecutor dropped every charge except for alleging that I purposely placed other people in imminent risk of physical injury, right? And I sure as heck did. That's what the guns were there for. Purposely placed at least one person in apprehension of immediate physical injury. In other words, I stood out on the porch with my rifle and made them back up. And that's what I'd do again if that's a crime in Missouri. By God, I did it. And I do it again. I do it again. Anytime the mob approaches me, I'll do what I can to place them in imminent threat of physical injury because that's what kept them from destroying my house and my family.
Quick question. Will he do it again? Does anyone know the answer to that question?
I wonder if he would.
Yeah, I think he would. So he's 64. He'll pay $750 after pleading guilty to fourth-degree assault, a Class C misdemeanor. Patricia McCloskey must pay a $2,000 fine after pleading guilty to second-degree harassment. That is a Class A misdemeanor. Patricia McCloskey could have spent up to a year behind bars. Neither will face jail time. So there you go. That case is over, and he will have to search elsewhere for free publicity. That was a pretty good soundbite, though. I'm going to have to give him credit on that one. We have Dave Murray coming up in a few minutes, so let's do this here.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No.
And now, Sue's News.
This is brought to you by?
Brought to you by Sue.
That's right.
Well, I have a random fact, but I'll save that for Dave Murray because I'm sure he's going to use it. Okay, 53% of Americans say they inherited some of their bad snacking habits from their parents. Do you have a top snack that you cannot turn down, Fred Bottomer?
I love chocolate milk. Does that count?
No, dear.
Okay.
Then and I'm going to be with Sue.
That does not count as a
snack. That's not even sort
of a snack. That's like protein. That's a great recovery.
Cheese and crackers.
That's a great recovery drink,
cheese
chocolate
and crackers.
Milk.
All right. No, that's not either.
Like
peanut butter.
Let me help you with something here. Cheetos or Doritos or candy?
Nothing. You're not a candy guy?
I'm not a candy guy.
No, interesting.
But if you're going to like in between meals, yeah.
Not a cookie guy.
Cookies? I brought you a cookie and you ate it.
Sue. Let's.
I love your cookies.
Okay,
let's start the bit over. Ask someone else.
Okay,
maybe?
All right.
I don't know.
You know, Mark, 53% of Americans say they inherited some of their bad snacking habits from their parents. Mark Reardon, what can you not turn down as a snack?
I do like the Doritos,
ranch that's
or
on
nacho
here.
Cheese. Yeah, I like the crunchy Cheetos too. But I will say I can't put any of this on my parents. I don't even remember what my parents snacked on.
I don't either.
I never saw my parents snack on anything.
They always had
you
cookies.
You think chocolate milk is a snack, so you had good parents. What about you, Andrew? What's your number one snack?
Oh, boy. It'd be faster to list the things I can turn down.
I'm kind of like that way, too.
Yeah.
Braunschweiger.
We could be here all day.
Yeah, that's fun. Cookies, number one. Potato chips, number two. Popcorn, number three. Pretzels and corn chips. Corn chips, I can do if it's dip, but otherwise,
bugles,
I think Fritos smell like
you
feet.
You know what bugles are? The little things?
Yeah.
Those are good.
Those are corn. I don't
kind of like
do
corn
tortilla chips.
Chips
count as corn chips?
Yeah, I think so.
I can eat tortilla chips without any
sauce
or anything.
Some.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. And I ate them without sauce or anything.
You can eat them straight with nothing on them?
Oh, yeah. I think they're good.
Carl, what's yours?
Snickers bars.
Okay.
Really satisfies.
Yeah, it does. But and I can't blame that on my parents at all. I started in high school. I had one a day every year in high school.
What?
Every day
one
in high school.
A day?
You had a Snickers bar
at lunch.
Day. Okay.
A Snickers bar at lunch, every day.
I got you. All right.
Wow.
You know what my go-to is, though, on the sweets front right now? It's these little, and I highly recommend them. There was a bit of a run during COVID, but the Reese's Dark Thins.
Oh, those are great.
I know, those are great. Mm-hmm. I had a couple
in
of those today.
In the refrigerator.
Mm. Or the freezer, Carl. The freezer's okay, too. I promise.
Yeah, that's a,
Don't leave them in your car this time of year because they turn to mush.
A word to the wise. Two new Skittle products coming out. Andrew, Skittles, yes, no. I think
yeah,
you
Skittles.
Like Skittles. They have Skittles Yoplait yogurt.
No.
I just thought, okay, maybe Fred will eat that.
Nope,
I don't know.
I'm not a Skittles guy.
Of course you're not.
But you're a yogurt guy.
Yeah, but you like yogurt.
I'm a yogurt guy, but I'm an M&M's guy.
And they're also going to do Skittles candy canes. I just don't know if that's going to.
No.
68% of Americans admit to intentionally avoiding deodorant during the pandemic because why? They just didn't see the point.
Wait,
68%.
Said what?
I'm not putting on deodorant. Why?
You've got to. There's no way I believe it. I do not believe that.
Hopefully 68% of people work from home.
But even then.
If you live with people, come on.
Yeah.
That's brutal.
That seems singletons. Excessively high. Right. I would be very skeptical. That's the same group that did the polling in Pennsylvania and Arizona and Georgia because there's no way that's accurate.
I know.
Now, if they talk to my son, my 24-year-old son,
who
still at the age of 24 hasn't really learned to put on deodorant, maybe that's the group that they were talking
to. How is that? There's nobody that finds that attractive. Is he dating someone who has yet to say put on some deodorant?
That's a question that we have asked many times, and he's not dating anyone now. Go figure.
Well,
maybe there's not a coincidence
put
there.
The math together.
But this was just in the last 15 months, so I'm sure these people have gone back to it, hopefully.
I don't know. I hope so, Carl. It's
maybe not, though,
because
they haven't gone back to the office, right?
Yes, mm-hmm. Totally.
By the way, just as a little note aside, just in case I forget, and it does happen, and, you know, you're kind of self-aware. I have some here in the office.
I have emergency deodorant
in
my purse.
For sure.
Come on. You
got to
do it,
you have to have
people.
An emergency because I'll get here every once in a while, and I'll think it's Andrew. And I'm like, no, that's me. And I just
sorry,
kidding.
Andrew.
Andrew, there was a guy that we used to work with at the old place.
There was.
Never.
Ever?
Never.
See, that's a problem.
Yeah, was a problem.
They had candles because of it.
Was he aware that you guys were talking?
No,
you know what I'm saying? Was he not aware of the problem?
He didn't know that, hey, it's mood candles that we're all putting on in the afternoon.
That's awful.
Yeah.
It now appears that people are starting to prefer streaming shows that release episodes weekly, like our beloved Mayor. Instead of ones you can binge all at once. This is the new trend. The once-a-week drop helps subscribers on the platform. They may let them find out more content. So they're thinking, well, if we just do the one-a-week thing, maybe they'll come back. Has anybody watched Disney's Loki?
Yes, and because of Loki, Disney has decided that they are now going to release them all on Wednesdays, starting from now on rather than Fridays.
Oh.
Yep, they're doing it Wednesday. Now, Carl, is it good? Give it yes, no.
Yes.
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit last week.
Yes.
I'm looking forward to checking it out. I have not
now,
done that
she
yet.
Knows I'll talk about this
more than
she cares
he
about.
He will wax philosophic. Sometimes I love it. Sometimes I don't have time. And a Finnish company.
He's got children and he's kissed a girl, right?
Yeah, oh no, he has.
I know, that's
and
amazing.
She's very nice. I like his wife. A Finnish company is
she didn't say me. She liked her.
By the way, I get that a lot. I get that a lot.
Your wife's great.
I like my wife. I don't deserve her.
A Finnish company is going to launch a satellite made out of plywood into space.
Smart.
This is going to be the first wooden satellite. They actually just want to see how plywood, which is birch-based, withstands all the hardships of space. So it's a nano satellite. It's 4x4 and only weighs 2.2 pounds. It will have two cameras, one of which will be on a metal selfie stick that will allow the team to see how this, the plywood behaves. It's specially coated with something.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the point is, they want to make they call them CubeSats, and they want to make them for students so students can send their own little plywood satellite up into space. It kind of makes sense, even though it's weird. We'll see if it happens.
So they just want to find out if wood can make
it. Can you send such a cheap satellite into space, which I just think would lead to space junk, but no one asked.
Did you ever think those little wooden planes that you could just fly?
Yeah.
You know, you'd slip them
little
together.
Beach.
I remember those, yeah.
Made a little beechwood or whatever that is, yeah.
Did they ever work?
For about 12.
I mean, they don't fly.
For
they don't have engines in them. Yeah.
They don't have engines. And do you need to get to Dave Murray?
No, we're good.
Okay. And a diamond found in Botswana. You know I'm obsessed with these.
Oh, I heard about this one.
Okay.
I saw the video of it.
This is nuts.
Yes.
They believe this is the third largest diamond gem quality that has ever been found. Fred, how many carats?
75.
1,098.
Wow. It was huge.
Mm-hmm.
It's
and,
huge.
And what was, I think, somewhat unique is this was in an area that's not really known for gems, isn't it?
That may be part of it. My story was talking more about the fact that they haven't released how much it's worth, Mark, but they say in 2017, the second largest, which also was found in Botswana, went for $53 million.
Holy cow.
Now, it's nuts.
When I heard that story, the first thing I thought of was, I wonder if it was one of those places where you go and dig.
Right. Well, some guy just
found it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But no, it's a totally different continent. Now, the biggest diamond ever found.
Arkansas, Botswana.
It's close.
It's not anywhere near that. Botswana, wait, I'm sorry. The largest diamond ever found was 3,100 carats. It was the Cullinan diamond found in South Africa in 1905. Now, here's the other thing I didn't know. Botswana has a minerals minister, and he said the country really needs it because diamond sales fell off because no one was wearing deodorant during the pandemic.
It all comes
back. You see
back.
What I did there? You see what I did there? Okay, and that's it for Sue's News.
And we appreciate that.
Brought to you by
Sue. Very good. All right, another edition tomorrow afternoon. Dan Buff is going to drop by as well, and we will talk movies and entertainment tomorrow afternoon. We got a little heat wave here, Sue. Have you noticed that?
I have.
This was a go-to soundbite I was reminded of today, and usually the rule has been on my show for probably more than a decade. That is, if we're in the triple digit, let's see where we're at right now. We're going to have Dave Murray tell us. But Dave, are we in triple digit territory with the heat index right now by any chance?
We're close with the heat index, but this is a really dry heat. So we're 95 right now, and the heat index is only about 96.
Oh, okay. Well, I think this, you tell me. I think this still works. Let's see if it does.
It's so damn hot. Milk was a bad choice.
Yeah, I think this day qualifies as that, right? Because it is pretty hot out there, although there's going to be a difference when that dew point starts creeping up.
Yes, no question. But we're having trouble with that because the basic flow is out of the southwest, so it's coming from the desert southwest. Also, our soil is so dry, it's bone dry, and that's adding to the heat. I do think we hit 100, maybe 101 tomorrow afternoon, warmest part of the day, because we're in the longest days of the year now. It's kind of like between 3 and 5 o'clock in the afternoon. The record tomorrow, 100 degrees from 1953. Ooh. So we're going to flirt with that. Want to take a guess at the last time we were 100 plus here in St. Louis?
Okay, 100 plus. The way you say that makes me think it wasn't last year.
August of 2019.
Dang it! All right, July of 2019.
September of 2019.
You're close with July. It's July 14th. July 14th, 2018.
What?
Really?
2018. Dang.
2018.
Huh. That I would not have guessed.
You want to have the hottest ever in June?
Hottest ever in June, Sue.
In June?
In June, right.
102. What do you think?
Did he hear us?
Want to hear some more numbers?
Come on. Come on, Mark.
104.
Yeah, 106.
Oh, that's close. 108.
Ooh.
From 2012. And anybody who was in St. Louis in 2012 remembers it was a brutal summer. Brutal. We had a lot of dry heat in 2012, kind of like what we're going through right now. When the atmosphere is dry, doesn't have much moisture in it, temperatures skyrocket on us.
But I'm just going to tell you, having been in, I think I mentioned this to you last time, Dave, that I was in Vegas a couple weeks ago. It was 107 on one of the days, and they were in record territory for that day. But the dew point was only 26. I get back here, and we're in the 70s with the dew point. It was miserable. So the dry heat
right.
is different. I mean, you're not, for example, at Busch Stadium, if you go to a game when it's like this, and I went the other night, you're not just dripping with sweat. So there's a big advantage.
Yeah, it evaporates off you relatively quickly for St. Louis anyway. Everything's relative to St. Louis. It's not like Las Vegas dry heat. It's not like Oklahoma City dry heat. It's St. Louis's version of dry heat.
And then quickly for what are we looking at Saturday and Sunday here this weekend?
Okay, let's first of all, in the 90s, holding in the 90s Friday evening, Saturday and Sunday, partly sunny, hot, somewhat humid, 95 each day, Saturday and Sunday. I think Monday is still a little bit on the warm to hot side, but a strong cold front's coming in, and we are talking much cooler air Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday of next week.
I like to hear
How
that.
How about daytime highs in the 70s to near 80 and 50s at night?
Wow, that's more like early May. Meteorologist Dave Murray, thanks for the update.
Dave.
That's some good news. Appreciate it, Dave.
It.
We'll talk soon. See you. Gene Becker, who used to be the personal assistant for George Herbert Walker Bush, and some great stories, including one about Cheech from Cheech and Chong. Coming up.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
I'm making a rare exception, and I'm having a guest on that was just on 2 weeks ago again, because Gene Becker, you were so good. You're going to be a trivia question on my show someday. Which was the guest that you had back just 2 weeks after having her? Because you wrote this book about 41, the amazing story of George Herbert Walker Bush's post-presidency. It's a great book. I've had a chance to read it now. And I felt like when you were with me a couple of weeks ago, we barely scratched the surface. So first and foremost, how are you?
Well, I'm on the top of the world because you had me back on your show. So I might be the happiest person in America right now. Thank you.
Let's get a quick review of who Gene Becker is and how you got to this point of writing this book. And there's a strong Missouri connection. So go.
I grew up in Missouri on a farm about 2 hours west of St. Louis, Audrain County. I was a newspaper reporter for 10 years. Somehow ended up at the White House working for First Lady Barbara Bush in her press office. And for the last 25 years of his life was George Herbert Walker Bush's chief of staff.
So we ran down some of those great stories that you share in the book, but I'm going to toss some things out to you that we didn't talk about last time. And I'll use some of the phrasing from the book, but I have to have you share with the audience the Prince Bandar story, because this one is it's funny, it's unique. And I think this one sort of, when I read this story, I could just hear 41 basically giving you some instructions on this.
This is the day I decided to write a book, Mike. You have to tell this story to the whole world. So I'm going to make it a short story. He was very close to a man named Prince Bandar, who was the ambassador to the United States from Saudi Arabia for something like 30 years. At this point, I think it's 2012, maybe, he is back in Saudi Arabia. He's basically head of the Saudis, equivalent of the CIA. And there were rumors everywhere that Bandar had been assassinated by the Syrians. And a variety of people kept calling me and saying, what do you know? Have you heard anything? And I finally got a call and said, you have to tell him, Gene, the French press just reported it. And it's going to be on CNN any minute. You got to tell him that Prince Bandar has probably been assassinated. So I was dreading it. And I sat down with him. I took his hand. I said, sir, I have something to tell you that's not going to be easy. Tell him what was going on. And he looked at me and he said, well, did you try to call Bandar? Yeah. Well, the answer to that would be no.
No, right.
It never occurred to me to call a man who's probably dead. And he says, well, let's try to get him on the phone, Gene. So we call in to his assistant through an open window. We're sitting outside. And I said, Jimmy, get Prince Bandar on the phone for President Bush. He leans out the window. He says, have you told him? Like, get him on the phone. 10 seconds later, Jimmy leans back out the window and says, Prince Bandar on line one. And President Bush picks up the phone and literally said to him, Mike, Bandar, George Bush, hey, man, dead or alive? And then he covers up his half of the phone and he says, Gene, he's alive. I said, yeah, I sort of got that. And so, Bandar tells him, I'm in hiding. The Syrians are after me. Don't worry about it. They'll never find me. FYI, by the way, Bandar is still alive. And when President Bush got off the phone, he said, now, Gene, this is a very good life lesson for you. There's been all this back and forth between you and the CIA and Jim Baker. And is he dead or is he alive? If there's ever any question, if someone's dead or alive, call them on the phone. And if they answer the phone, they're alive.
That's a pretty good rule of thumb. And I love that story. Gene Becker is with me. It's Mark Reardon, 97.1 FM Talk. The book is called The Man I Knew. I was in Milwaukee on 9/11. So I remember, my perspective, which is 41 landed at Mitchell Field that day on 9/11. But you share the story, don't you?
Mark, I can't believe you were in Milwaukee on 9/11. So,
and by the way, the Cardinals were there. The Cardinals were there on 9/11. I was supposed to go to that game.
Oh my
that
gosh,
night,
I didn't know that.
Yep, they were.
Wow. So what happens is we're in D.C. the morning of 9/11. The Bushes had spent the night at the White House with their son. I was in a hotel. We were there for some cancer board meetings. And they were wheels up about 8 a.m. Eastern time to fly to Minneapolis, St. Paul that day to give some speeches. I stayed behind in D.C. for more cancer meetings. 9/11 happens. All of our life and world turn upside down. And I called the Secret Service to find out where they were, because I knew all the planes, the United States had been grounded. And I called the Secret Service command post and I said, where are they? He asked me if I was on an open line. I said I was. And he said that I cannot tell you. They had been taken to a very secure, classified place. They're safe, but I can't tell you where they are. I said, I get that. And so the day goes on. And that evening, I'm still at the Renaissance Hotel in D.C., sitting with some friends, waiting to listen to the president address the nation. And my cell phone rings. We were all very surprised because cell phone service was so spotty that day in D.C. I answer my phone, and it's President Bush, my boss. And I was so happy to hear his voice, Mark, just so happy to hear from him. And I said to him, I said, sir, I know you can't tell me where you are. I get that, but I'm just so happy to hear from you. He said, well, what do you mean? So I told him what the Secret Service had told me, secure, classified. He says, Gene, I'm at a Hampton Inn outside Milwaukee.
Right.
Bar and I have been holed up in a Hampton Inn all day.
And didn't he say, like, they had gone down to get some food and people were kind of looking at him and like, oh, yeah, they there's went the former
across
president.
They went across the street to an Outback Steakhouse.
Yeah, there you go.
For dinner. And he said, we feel pretty safe here, Gene, because we don't think any terrorists are going to be looking for us at a Hampton Inn. And when they went to the Outback Steakhouse, can you imagine being at an Outback Steakhouse in Milwaukee the night of 9/11 and in walks George and Barbara Bush?
That would be surreal.
He said, people seem surprised. I'm like, really?
Yeah, I wonder why, right? I wonder why they were surprised.
Wow.
So Sue here, who's with me, gives me a little trouble. I'm just absolutely a Hall of Fame name dropper, and I dropped Kevin Costner's name the other day. And ironically, in this book, there's a great story about Tin Cup, which I just watched again, like the whole movie. It was one of my favorite movies. Tin Cup, Gene, as you know, was filmed partially in Houston. And you got a little angle here with 41 on Tin Cup and Kevin Costner, right?
Oh, yes. President Bush was all over this movie. His good friend Jim Nance did a cameo in the movie as himself, Jim Nance from CBS Sports. And Jim arranged for us to come out and to the set one day. And you can be sure that I went with him. And Kevin Costner started acted as his tour guide and showed him around the set. It was wonderful. And the first thing I know, President Bush is inviting the entire cast to come over for dinner. So Kevin came, Cheech Marin came. He was in of Cheech and Chong. Everyone will remember that.
Oh,
and Don Johnson. Those are the only three who could come. And somebody's an assistant. Another guy came. But two things about that dinner stand out in my mind. One is that President Bush, I mean, Kevin Costner at that point was a superstar. Next to him would have been Don Johnson. Cheech, you know, President Bush had no idea who he was. And Cheech was sitting there very quiet, wasn't saying a word. And President Bush just zeroed in on him and brought him out, drew him out, started asking him questions. As it turns out, Cheech's father was a police officer in San Francisco, and he was very proud of that. It was just interesting watching President Bush do that, Mark. He was so good at that. I'm just staring at Kevin Costner, but Bush is giving all his attention to Cheech. The second thing, and I'm not proud of this, we had a huge conversation at dinner about the O.J. Simpson trial.
By the way, I want to talk about this. Today is June 17th. I was going to bring this up. So this was the day in 1994, and it was a Friday. This was the day of the chase, right? So O.J. Simpson comes up, and then is it true that Barbara Bush calls O.J. Simpson the sexiest man she had ever met, right?
She did.
Oh.
A table that includes Kevin Costner, Don Johnson, and her husband. At that point of 50-some years, Mrs. Bush says, you know, O.J. Simpson, I do believe, is the sexiest man I ever met. And President Bush sort of looked at her, and he said gently, Barr, there are a number of men at this table who would like to think that maybe they're the sexiest man you ever met. That would include me, your husband. And Mrs. Bush was uncharacteristically tongue-deaf. She said, nope, O.J. O.J.
Wow.
By far.
Wow.
I mean, he could walk in a room and that smile just lit up the room. I'm like, oh, my gosh.
Well, you know, that was, if you watch the documentary, too, that was something that O.J. was great at. And he had that persona in the 1970s. And that's
what
people clinged. I mean, he was an American hero at that time, right?
He was. He absolutely was. Yeah, he was.
Well, you have some Cardinals stories, and you told me the Pujols story a couple of weeks ago, so leave that one out. That's a great story. But there was also a Lou Brock story, right?
Ooh.
There is a great Lou Brock story. So, President Bush, one day here in Houston, he decides to take the staff, the Secret Service, their families, everybody in reach that day. He is very spontaneous. Mrs. Bush was out of town. Takes him to an Astros baseball game. And I think 50 of us went, and he buys the seats in the upper left field corner.
Okay.
We're way up high. The stadium was half empty. The Astros weren't doing so great that year. And he was really trying to, you know, support the owner, Drayton McLean, who was a great friend, support the Astros. So 50 of us go to the ball game. he gives his credit card to the closest concession stand, who almost passed out. And he said, just hot dogs, beer, whatever these people want. The only other people sitting up there, you can't make this up, is a children's choir from Uganda. Are you gone?
Okay.
They were touring the United States. They're in the upper left-field corner. During a rather exciting part of the game, they didn't get this. They started singing to President Bush. So what happened when they figured out who was sitting up there with them, they just start singing. Well, the camera, this, you know, the camera guy, camera cam guy, zeroes in on what the heck's going on in left field. These people are singing instead of watching the game. And there's George Herbert Walker Bush on the big screen with all these singing children from Uganda. So sure enough, within 15 minutes, who comes charging up the stairs but the owner of the Astros, Drayton McLean, and he was hosting at the game that night some Hall of Fame players who were in town for some kind of Hall of Fame meeting or event. And right behind Drayton, I'm probably the only one who recognized him, was my Cardinal hero, Lou Brock. So everybody is talking. Drayton is giving President Bush a hard time about it. You know, what are you doing here? Why are you up here? Jim Nance is actually there. This Jim Nance is in the story, too. Jim Nance happened to be in town. He's from Houston. He went to the game with us. And out of the blue, Mark, I blurted to Lou Brock, Lou Brock, I love you. I have loved you since childhood. It was a conversation stopper. Everybody is looking at me. Lou Brock looks a little shocked.
Right.
And Jim Nance said, really, Gene, if you're such a Lou Brock fan, tell us what number he wore as a Cardinal.
Come on, Gene. Oh, come on.
Exactly. Are you kidding me? I said, every Cardinal fan would know the answer to that, Jim Nance. Number 20, please. So President Bush was so proud of me. President Bush is grinning from ear to ear. Lou Brock just looks at me, and you can tell he's thinking, okay, not only have I found a former president of the United States in Section 415 in Minute Maid Park, I found a Cardinal fan, a Lou Brock fan, and he gave me a big hug. It was a great night for me.
Well,
I couldn't believe it.
Now I have to have you, just because it's such a great story, you got to throw the Pujols story in here, because I love, and this really kind of represents, I think, some fun tension between you and 41.
It's the biggest fight we ever had. I mistakenly told President Bush, this was another game, Pujols had just hit a home run, not the one that he hit in that playoff series game that sent the series back to St. Louis. It was just a regular season game. Hit a towering home run. I literally had just read that if Pujols stayed healthy, he could retire as the best hitter who ever played the game. His stats might be the best ever. So as he's rounding the bases, I innocently turned to President Bush and said, sir, we could be watching the greatest hitter to ever play the game. I just read that it's possible Albert Pujols could retire, the best hitter.
Uh-oh.
My God. He considered Ted Williams as one of his best friends. And he looked at me and he said, are you kidding me? Better than Ted Williams? Gene, has he hit 400 yet in a season? I said, no. He says, I cannot believe you just said that to me. It's really one of the dumbest things I think you've ever said.
Wow.
And the thing that was funny about it, Mark, he never forgot it. Years later, people would come up to me and say, did you really tell President Bush one time that Albert Pujols could be a better hitter than Ted Williams? I said, yes, I told him that 2 or 3 years ago. Well, he's still really mad about it. He just brought it up over cocktails. He never forgot it. Here's the funny thing. President Bush was very good friends with Tony La Russa. The Oakland A's had won the World Series when President Bush was president and Tony was their manager. And when he brought the team to the White House, I think the two of them bonded. So whenever Tony was in Houston, he was always invited to come say hi to President Bush. We had lunch with him a couple times. I, of course, was thrilled to death by all this. So Tony was invited to President Bush's funeral. And he emailed me, and his wife couldn't accompany him. Tony was invited, plus one. And he said, do you think it would be okay if I brought Albert Pujols as my guest to the funeral? Yeah. Albert is a big fan of President Bush's. I think he would love to come. Oh, my gosh. I felt like I sort of had the last word. I said to Tony, yes, you can bring Albert Pujols to President Bush's funeral. And here's the funny thing, guys. They were sitting on the aisle of the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C., and when the Bush family left, the 43rd president of the United States, George W. Bush, of course, former owner of the Texas Rangers, saw them sitting there, shook their hands. But then on the plane back to Houston, he came back to find me, and he said, what the hell was Albert Pujols doing at Dad's funeral? I didn't put this in the book. So this is just for you and your listeners.
Yeah, you didn't tell me that a couple weeks ago.
I'm ad-libbing now. He says, what was Albert Pujols doing at Dad's funeral? I don't think he liked him. I said, no. It's not that he didn't like Albert. He was mad at me. I told him the story. I told him why he was there. Why he was there, he thought it was very
that
funny.
That is awesome. That's really great. But here's the bad news for Eugene. Something tells me that you might have to confront 41 on that when you reach the pearly gates. I'm just saying, I'm not convinced that conversation about Albert Pujols is over. We'll have to wait and see. You, by the way, have gone down. I'm just going to tell you right now, you're one of my favorite guests ever. The book is called The Man I Knew,
Mark.
The Amazing Story of George Herbert Walker Bush. Really, and I'm so glad I read it. It's fantastic. It's very, very compelling, and it makes you smile a lot, which we need a lot more of these days. So, Gene Becker, thanks so much for coming on here.
Thank you, Mark.
You're the best.
Thanks.
All right. Come
Thanks
see
to everybody
us.
There.
Take care, Gene. She was awesome. And by the way, Scott Jennings says hi. I was out with him the other night. He used to work for 43 and said that
he did.
He had fond memories. I told him that Albert Pujols story, so I think he's going to get the book. Thank you, Gene.
Thank you, Mark. Bye.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Tomorrow afternoon, we have a Reardon Roundtable. That is how we head into the weekend, the 3 o'clock hour. Jane Duker will be back with us. Gene Evans, who used to be the executive director of the state GOP, and former state senator Jeff Smith. Dan Buffa on movies. And then I have a wildlife issue for us to confront tomorrow.
Ooh, I'm ready.
And I'll explain it. It involves raccoons. I had a bit of a raccoon issue last year at my house, and I may or may not have been encouraging it with food.
Oh, dear.
Just so I could get good videos.
And,
and I got great videos. Well, this
what
all starts a long story.
What do you do with
story.
These videos?
Well, I posted them at the time. I mean, I put them up on social. This is a long story, but basically what happened was my wife had this bird seed, and it wasn't getting put in the bird feeders. It was sitting in this big deal, and the raccoons were coming in and just having a field day with it. But then they were so darn cute, some of the babies, that I started feeding them cat food, and I would set my iPad out there on a tripod, and they'd come in, and they were like my little pets for a couple of weeks.
But then I was worried
they were going to tear my cat's eyes out and my dog's eyes out and all that stuff.
That
but
seems specific.
They make a lot of noise, and they when they're trying to eat, they kind of. I can show you the videos.
They get excited.
Yeah,
I'm going into your Twitter account right now.
Oh, well, it's a while ago when I posted that. But if you look, it's probably June of last year during COVID.
Year.
Hey, this is something I wanted to ask you about too, Sue, because you do traffic. I saw this story earlier. And you know, there's a part of me that kind of wants to joke about this, but then there's a part of me that doesn't want to joke about it because it's pretty serious and it happens all the time. So here's the story from this morning. I don't know if you actually, this was yesterday. I don't know if you reported on this. A motorist was shot when he tried to read the license plate of a woman who pointed a gun at him on I-70. 44-year-old victim followed the woman's car off the interstate and was shot. This was 1:45 in the afternoon at Hadley and Montgomery. The intersection where he was shot is about a block south of the interstate in the city's old North St. Louis neighborhood. Now, this is that stretch of I-70 where this has happened repeatedly.
What was the? He was trying to read her license plate?
All right, so he says, here's what happens. He says he's driving west on I-70. The car pulls up alongside him. Now, whether or not something happened before that, whether or not he's leaving that out. Car pulls up, woman points a gun at him. So then he follows. Something tells me there had to be something, but maybe not. So the guy follows this car to get a look at the license plate. And at Hadley and Montgomery, the car makes a U-turn and the woman just starts firing shots. I mean, he could have easily been killed.
Gosh, yeah.
That's right. Weird.
So, and this has happened a lot in this city. Now, I guess.
Well, not this specifically, but yes, a lot of shooting on 70.
No. It has happened a lot on I-70. There have been people that have just been randomly shot on this stretch of I-70. I mean, if I was approaching the situation on this corridor of Interstate 70 the same way that our former mayor was approaching COVID and some other officials, I would shut down that stretch of I-70 from the city to the airport. I would lock it down. I would not allow anyone on there because it's too dangerous, okay? Keep that in mind. 455, 97.1 FM Talk. Another hour still to go.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.